I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, a show that never has anything to hide but simply has nothing to show you. This is episode number 50, and today we'll be reviewing three films. First of all, we'll be doing Tully, which is what,
Rob? House Tully from Game of Thrones?
Yes. It's a movie about House Tully from Game of Thrones. And then we'll be doing this movie called Anon, which is what, Luke?
I have no idea. I didn't watch it.
You just heard us talk about it.
No, nothing.
And we'll end our show with a marathon pick review that Rob has. It's Rob's turn this time. And it's Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, 1950-something, right?
I think 56.
Okay.
I think he stole it from The Simpsons.
And in case you recognize that, maybe, Luke, you're here, finally.
Yes, I am.
Here. Here in Chicago.
Color, yes.
In Chicago. This is not a hologram. You're really here.
Yeah, I'm not worthy of Tupac hologram technology.
And I think you're here next time, too, right?
Possibly.
But then after that, you're gone again forever.
Yes, okay, for cool. Another 3 months.
And I'll have to write some new locations that you're never at that I say that you're at.
Chappaquiddick.
Chappaquiddick, for example. You can follow everything we do for the show on our website, otherpodcast.com, as well as all of our other shows, not to mention our bonus episodes and marathon picks. And what else do we do on there? We do a lot of shit. But everything is on there right now. And for bonus, this month's bonus episode of May, what is that, Luke? We just talked about it. Do you remember?
Oh, Deadpool 2?
Nope.
No? The Pope movie.
The Pope movie. Pope John... I don't know. No, not that
no,
one either.
No, okay.
It's a certain Star Wars flick.
Chappaquiddick?
Nope. Star Wars film.
Oh, Solo.
Solo. That's right. We're going to watch that. You're going to watch that one, right?
Yeah.
All right. You're like, yeah. All right. That's our bonus episode for this month. And the month and the one that's released for everyone today, or this month that came out 5 months ago, was The Shape of Water, which I think I reviewed with Roth, right? 5 months
yes.
ago?
Yes,
probably.
So December pick, I think we did. And, yeah, now let's talk about some recent discoveries. Luke, you have two films for me. Don't you?
Two? Do I?
Yeah, you do. Oh, two things, I should say. Two things. You already forgot what they were, didn't you? You're giving me quizzical face.
I know one, for sure.
You know, if you read the notes that we all share, you can literally look at it right now.
Yeah.
But the first one is a documentary, Scream Something.
Scream for Me, Sarajevo. I literally just saw it a couple hours ago.
Sweet.
It is pretty much, it takes place in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And it is when Bruce Dickinson went to Sarajevo to have a concert for a city under siege in some of the worst conditions ever, under threat of like sniper fire, mortar rounds going off all over the place.
Really?
Yes.
So it's about a one-day event thing?
It took like probably like 5 days.
Okay.
Originally, like they were supposed to give a helicopter escort into Sarajevo, but that didn't go through. So they ended up going in these like huge yellow trucks and, like down... from I don't know from wherever they landed. It was like a 2-day journey.
Really?
Yeah, huge yellow trucks with like the Roadrunner painted on.
So who was it going? The musician?
Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's when he was doing his solo stuff.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he was doing solo things like
yes.
that. So what was the need to go there?
It was just like a dumb luck thing.
A political thing?
No, it was just to throw a concert for the people.
Okay.
And
do you not know how war torn there was?
He just said, fuck it.
All right.
Half ignorance, probably. Half just like, hey, let's do it. Just, yeah.
How was the movie, though?
Oh, it's pretty good. It starts off as, like, the first half of the movie is pretty much telling you, like, it is a fucking war zone. And it's pretty graphic. It shows some of, like, you know, the footage from the actual war. And, I mean, there's stuff that made me cringe a little. Like, you see, like, there's the guy that kind of started this whole concert thing. There's a very famous picture of him that he told a story behind it where it's like there was a mother and a child, like they were walking or somewhere, and the kid comes up to the UN worker and he's like, hey, do you have like some candy or something? Because that's one thing they would always do is give the kids candy. And he's like, no, I don't have anything like that. As they walk a couple meters away, a sniper hits the mother. The bullet goes through the mother, through the kid.
Ouch.
And there's this picture of the like him like, they took like a armored vehicle, like spun it around just to, you know, get him out of the rain of fire, but it was just too late.
Wow.
And it's just the most graphic picture of just the kids laying on the ground in a pool of blood.
Okay.
Yeah.
And apparently this movie is highly limited release right now?
Yeah. I only knew that because I was just following their Facebook page. And right. I know it did a couple, you know, film festivals and things like that. I think it was even in Chicago, like at a film festival last
Which one?
Year.
Oh, the Chicago one of, International yeah, one?
Okay. Yes. But I had no idea about it, so.
They have their Critics Film Festival right now in Chicago.
Yeah. Obviously, when it was in the Sarajevo Film Festival, so.
But I hope it helps.
But right now, it's just a limited theater engagement, and then it's going to go pretty much like a straight to a DVD type of situation.
Oh, okay.
Which
that sucks.
I would be pre-ordering.
Kind of was hoping for a wide release, maybe.
Well, I think there's going to be another one at Landmark Century, I think on the 15th of this month.
Oh, nice. That's a local watering hole. Mm-hmm. They show a lot of indie movies, for sure. Or movies that are hard to watch. Yeah. That's cool. It's called again, what?
Scream for Me, Sarajevo.
Thank you. And look out for that, guys. I know it's not available right now, but it should come out in the near distant future. What's your second thing you've been watching? It is a Netflix show, although a show acquired it from BBC America.
Black Mirror?
Yes.
I finally started watching it, and I binged the first two seasons.
Tell us. Finally. I mean, I've been telling you for that. I mean,
yeah, you have.
Yeah. Why do you say no all the time?
It's really good. Because I have other stuff to watch.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't. Yes. Okay, so, yeah, how was it? Sci-fi stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, it's freaking crazy. I love some of it. And just, like, the moral dilemma, I'm like, do I want this, some type of thing?
Do you want anything that you've seen so far?
I want The Grain.
The Grain?
That's the implant for memory. And you can, like, roll back, like, and, like, replay things that happen in your life.
Is it about the couple that are having sex, but they're only replaying their best sex moments? That's the one?
Yeah. Well, you take, like, the most weirdest part of that entire thing.
Well, that's the one I remember the most. That's the part I remember the most. And then he finds all the minute details of her indiscretions or whatever and yells it at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want that one, huh?
Yeah.
Why?
Just so I could relive some good memories.
It's so fucked up,
just be like, what did that motherfucker say? I'm punching for it.
That's right. That's right. That would be fun. Although every argument could just be snuffed out immediately. You have it's your own personal.
Really lame.
But then you had like the episode with the woman who killed the kid, or like they kidnapped
him. White Bear or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they shock her every day to just remember what happens.
Yeah.
And it's like a park for just
another Westworld connection there, right? Where they wipe every memory. Have you seen those? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've been really watching that show. That's great. I'm Black Mirror. You have two more seasons to go. Are you going to finish it?
Yeah, I'll find some time.
Yeah, this is a great San Junipero episode. I can't wait for you to get that one. It's like clearly their brightest episode. It has a very Soma feel. If you remember that game. Do you replay it?
No.
Okay, my bad. Black Mirror, though. That's Luke on Netflix now. And I have two films here. One of them is a documentary, so you should be into that already. It's called Kate Plays Christine, and actress Caitlin Shale, prepares to portray the role of Christina Chubbuck, a real-life news reporter who took her own life on national television in 1974.
Hardcore.
You gave a sign. Did you say something?
I just forgot. I did watch something else.
Too late. Put it for the next one. And obviously, this written and directed by Robert Greene. And as far as I know, I don't know of this movie actually being made, or I haven't seen it. Not that I looked too deeply into it. But do you guys remember a few years ago a movie called Christine that came out? You guys remember? I was talking a lot about it. It had some Oscar buzz, but nothing was nominated, of course. It's made by someone completely different. It wasn't made by the same crew or the same actress or anything. It was Rebecca Hall, I think, who played Christine. And I have it on my iTunes if you guys want to watch it. And it's about the actual life story about this news reporter who killed herself. That is her legacy, essentially. She shot herself. She's the first person to shoot herself live on TV news reporting, you know. And a very depressed woman, as you can imagine, you know, in a male-dominated world. That whole thing. And it's fucked up. And the movie is directed by that Antonio Campos guy or Campos something. And it's pretty harrowing. So this one is about the same project. The movie is about this actress finding herself and finding how to be Christine Chubbuck, essentially, right? And you go through a lot of things. Sometimes you go through the scenes. You go through her wearing the makeup, wearing the spray tan, because she was a tan woman, not only memorizing lines, but also like going back to that town that she was in and talking to people that may have remembered her or knew her, and what do they think about her. She is this actress trying to find out how to play her role.
Okay.
And she gets so into it that, as you can imagine, she starts not falling for the character in that way, but finding a meaning with it, right? And it leads to this crucial, pretty great final scene of her playing the one scene that everyone's basically there to watch for, which is the scene where she commits suicide on TV. And it's really a great scene watching her try to do it. And I know that's spoilers for real life also, but it's a really good movie. And if you could ever find it somewhere, I found it on Mubi. But it is not exactly a rare documentary either. It made some buzz when it came out. I've heard about it before. It's called Kate Plays Christine. It came out in 2016. I recommend that movie highly for everyone. And also, Christine Watch Christine also came out 2-3 years ago. So that's my first film. And the next film I saw was a Netflix original, The Titan. Has anyone seen it?
Negative.
Anyone heard of it?
Negative.
Really? Okay. Well, it's, let me read the description here. A military family takes part in a groundbreaking experiment of genetic evolution and space exploration. That's pretty vague, though. This movie is The Titan, starring Sam Worthington, as first starring role since one of those Egypt movies, like Gods of Egypt or something. I don't remember. It's been a while. Yeah. Hey, he was an Avatar. He was the main guy in Avatar. Taylor Schilling also stars, and Tom Wilkinson. And this movie is one of their original films that came out. And I figure it's sci-fi. I like the synopsis. I don't particularly like Sam Worthington, but I've never particularly hated him either. And I wish this movie was something else. The movie tries. The movie almost markets itself to be this high concept, maybe sci-fi thriller or sci-fi action. It feels like something's about to happen in that vein. And then you realize halfway through the movie that the movie is just about the process of the experiment, what's going on with this dude's body. So they go in, it's the near future or something, and everything's fucked up. And they're trying to genetically alter human beings, the best human beings, which is one of them, to be able to survive on the Titan, which is the largest moon in Saturn, right? And apparently it's the closest thing to, you know, water and land and nitrogen. You know, it's the closest thing we can assimilate, right? And that's what they're doing. They're giving these soldiers a cocktail of drugs and genetic recoding and all this shit, all experimental things. And the whole movie is really the process of being human to being this other thing. And it's sometimes painfully slow for the film. And not to mention, I don't mind deliberate movies. I thought it was going to be more high-paced, maybe stupidness. And it wasn't that, but it also wasn't enough of the – it also kind of failed at keeping a tone level and level-headed I don't know, like believability maybe or something, or even like I wish the acting was way better. Maybe that would have sold me a lot more in the movie. But there were some things quite missing from the film, and unfortunately a lot of the deliberateness of the film made it a little more than boring to me. And it was kind of, you know, kind of a testy thing to watch. I saw it in like 2 sittings, and it's not that long of a movie. But it's The Titan, but if it has some fun concepts, definitely for sure. It just does not explore them fully when you think they should be, considering all the time they're spending on just the change of the guy's body and all these other people. For all that time they spend on it, you think they would have gotten more out of it, but they don't. Huh. But it has a cool enough ending.
You'd recommend it overall?
No.
That sucks.
No, I found it too boring for me. It's just for me. And I did think it was something completely different, though, so maybe that's why. But now that I'm telling you, it's something that, you know, that's about change and stuff and the family dynamics and all that.
Yeah.
Now that you know about that, maybe you'll find more enjoyment. But I certainly did not. I don't really recommend it. But it's definitely for someone, just not for me. So that's The Titan on Netflix, and that's what we've been watching. That's our recent discoveries. We will now head into our first review of the evening, which is a new-ish release. Came out last week or a week ago. It came out the same week of Avengers, right?
I think so, yeah. Didn't make that much money. $3 million, I think.
Poor Tully. Anyway, it's Tully. Let's find out what that's about.
Mom, what's wrong with your body?
Hello. I'm Tully. I'm here to take care of you.
I'm just not used to people doing things for me.
I hold a baby all day, and then nighttime rolls around and I'm supposed to just switch gears, like, hello, I'm all sexy now.
You're empty.
Yeah. No, you're empty on this side.
Your 20s are great. But then your 30s come around the corner like a garbage truck at 5 a.m.
Girls kill.
No, we don't. We might look like we're all better, but if you look close, we're covered in concealer.
convinced that you're this failure, but you actually made your biggest dream come true.
If you want to run off or something, I get that, because I want to do that too sometimes, but I'm not gonna.
I'm here to help you with everything. You can't fix the parts without treating the whole.
Yeah, no one's treated my whole in a really long time.
Yeah, Tully, a mother of three hires a night nanny to help her with her newborn. That's the short version.
Give me the short
version. Tully, a movie directed by Jason Reitman, written by Diablo Cody.
Their second or third film together, right?
I want to say so. Starring Charlize Theron, Mackenzie Davis, Ron Livingston, Mark Duplass.
Duplass.
You can say Duplass.
Duplass.
Yeah. Okay. And then others. We'll
yeah.
Just leave it there. So, Tully, I'm going to have first impressions go to Luke. What did you think of this movie?
Yeah, Luke. The family man.
Yeah, the one the least likely to have family. Yeah.
Maria.
Yeah, don't have kids. Fuck that shit.
Right. Well, don't be a woman and have kids, probably. It's a real
question.
That
too. Yeah. This is a fine reason why you need to eat your placenta.
That's not telling us what you think of the movie, but that's telling us gross things about the movie, for sure.
It was fine. It touched on a couple weird things. I didn't know where it was going at first. Kind of a nice surprise ending, and overall, a good journey.
Nice.
Oscar?
I think... it's hard to like this movie because the movie's so, you know, it's like it's living life, but also is dreading life that's living in a way, or like being really tired of it, really. That's not dreading, but just being really fucking tired about it and frustrated. It's, it keeps, it makes reality into a joke. And I guess those things I liked. I did like the movie. I came out really liking the movie in different ways than I expected. Going in, because I was thinking it was one thing, and it is that one thing, but it's also some other things. And I guess that was what more surprised me about it. And I came in with high hopes, by the way, because I love Young Adult.
Yeah.
Which also stars Charlize Theron, Diablo Cody, and the same director. And that movie is awesome. My favorite Patton Oswalt performance. And then obviously I really dug Juno. Everyone in the world loved Juno when it came out, and I still like that movie. It's very quotable. And based on those two films, I really came out with high hopes on this one. It doesn't maybe reach those heights of those two films, but this one, Tully, was a lot of fun in ways I didn't expect, and pretty cool in general. Fucked up, but yeah, kind of cool. You have?
Okay. The one with kids. Or with a
the
kid.
One with kid. The one with a kid and two on the way, right? A few more?
No.
Oh, okay.
Gotta hit seven.
I overall like the movie. I think my favorite aspect of the movie is what's it? The big reveal of the movie that we get.
No,
I don't want
to
say anything.
Okay, I thought you were about to.
No. That's just the big reveal.
Yeah.
That we'll get to in spoilers later.
Now they know there's a reveal.
Right, exactly. And then that and just this interesting conversation that, like I said, I'll get into spoilers. And just remind me to bring it up. That Tully and, oh my God, what's Charlize Theron's name in the movie?
Oh, Marlo.
Marlo, yes.
By the way, I just saw this last night. So
okay. That's right. So with that, Tully and Marlo have with each other about... what's it called?
Babies of the past? Apart.
No. If when they no. It's about if your genes are always changing, are you the same person you were?
Oh yeah. Okay.
One of my favorite conversations, probably in a movie.
Yeah.
Just because I've had that conversation before, I've heard that discussion before, and it's kind of true. Like you're not the same person you were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You're completely different.
Yes, person. I am.
So. And it's interesting. But besides that, yeah, I actually overall liked it a lot. It felt, you're 100% correct about how it feels, reality sucks, kind of, in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it is what's cool about the movie. I like how mundane it feels, everyday life, but at the same time, it feels, no, but that's because that's what it is. It's just a moment of, you know, some moments of greatness, some moments of amazingness, and the rest of it is mundane. That's how our lives are.
Yeah.
And I really like that from the movie. So, yeah, I overall enjoyed the movie.
I would also like to say that maybe the best power of this film is the casting. Charlie's not going to do no fucking wrong these days, right? Atomic Blonde and Mad Max and Young Adult and this one, you know, like, pretty good. And she knocks it. Also, Ron Livingston is an inspired casting right there. He plays a perfect fucking husband. Perfect fucking, like, come home, do a little bit of homework, play the video games, then go to sleep kind of husband. You know, like, he's perfect for that.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah. Reminds me of somebody I know.
Honestly, really good acting. It reminds me of someone. His name reminds me with Blauf. And really good for that. And I really like Mackenzie. I forgot her first name. Tully, the night nanny. Has anyone ever heard of a night nanny?
No.
Yes.
The white guy has heard of it.
Shut up.
Okay. Do you know someone who's had one?
No.
Okay.
Ooh, not that rich.
No. Not rich at all.
Anyone's table is not rich.
With our powers combined, we still owe a lot of money.
Well, yeah. Our debt has tripled. So I'm going into this movie, never heard of it either. And it does seem like a very white thing. I'm not saying I found it unbelievable.
It's a privileged thing.
But it's a privileged thing.
Oh, for sure.
And I even think that Mark Duplass, I always forget it's Mark, not Jay, right? Who's working a lot, by the way. He's doing 3 shows and movies. He perfect also rich guy behavior. Perfect. He acts just like the douchebags that I know, or the near douchebags or whatever. And he offers his deal and to her sister, Charlie Theron, to his sister, sorry, not her, and to get a night nurse to help out with the first few months or first few weeks of, after pregnancy, how hard it is to stay awake and the feeding and the kids screaming all the time. Give a night off, every night off, you know, instead of working 24 hours a day, right? And it's a nice idea. And I like the concept of it in the movie introduced. And I like how the movie takes its time, breathes it all in before she fucking has it fed up and has to she has to scramble through her purse to find the phone number. Yeah, the post-it. I like how it builds up to all of that. There is a problem with that scene, though, in retrospect, now that the movie has ended, that we'll talk about later. But I really like how the movie breathes to get to the Tully parts. And then once the Tully parts come in, another great part of this movie is that you feel as much relief as she does after her first good night of sleeping. And I think the movie does a good job of making you feel the same way that Marlo is feeling, to an extent, of course. Because in the end, we don't have the overstretched belly, we don't have, you know, all that stuff. But or kids, in this case, two of us don't have them. So, but as much as it can make you feel those things, I think it does. And I think it makes you feel relief and even more comically induced to their comedy as it comes up later on. So, do you guys agree with that assessment?
I do.
I concur.
You concur? Anyway. I'm not the one to monopolize, but anything you just want to say before moving on from those points or anything?
I don't know if we're going to spoil it or just right off the
bat. No, not yet.
This is kind of like, I mean,
you have a sister, has 2 kids.
Yes.
Anything that's related in any way?
Fuck no.
Does the movie feel relatable to you in any way?
No.
No? You don't know anyone like that? I mean, Ralph?
Yeah. one of my favorite scenes is when the daughter's eating breakfast and the house is clean and she's like, why is the house so clean?
Yeah.
And I was just like, man, I wish I had that problem.
Right? And even the husband's like, oh, yeah, like 8 years of like
exactly.
gunk
8
off
years
the floor.
Of gunk off the floor. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, the way he jokes about it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very relatable part. The kids' parts are obviously most relatable to me because it's probably how I acted as a kid.
Like, what's really relatable is it's sort of relatable, but not because. Tully at this point, or not Tully at this point.
Marlo.
I'm just thinking of the stupid movie now.
Yeah.
The name of the movie. Marlo is just had a baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's off on maternity leave, but she still tries to do everything. Obviously, they both need to work to keep the family alive, right? And obviously, the husband still works, you know, still is working. he's there for the baby being born. The next day, he's back at work.
Kind of bring home the baby.
It's the third kid. Like, the first kid, you can take a week off, you know, the baby two. After that, you're just like, you took 2 days off, you're good.
He slept basically right after the baby was born.
Yeah.
He was asleep in the chair.
He slept immediately, yeah.
The brother was like, tell him the congratulations, you know, because
right.
he's asleep.
Yeah. It just gets easier.
What, you having a kid, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, funny you mention that, because we were with my sister.
Uh-huh.
We were in my backyard, just all hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And the newborn, 6 months,
yeah.
he's in the basement. He's got like a little crib, you know, at our house, and he's sleeping. And my family friend makes a joke like, so where's the camera, like, on the kid? Because when they had the first kid, there was always like a little camera, you know, watching the child.
Yeah.
The second kid's like, oh, no, he's fine.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, they know not to worry so much. It's going to be fine.
Third kid, it's like, oh, yeah, there's a diaper there.
It's fine. Like 100 years ago where they wouldn't name the kid until they're 2 years old. Right. Most likely it'd be dead, and they don't want to attach a name to it.
Number three.
Are you okay? All right.
Yeah. Baby of two winters, so, I pronounce you your name.
Besides that, like...
That's good.
I think I don't know. I have, there's this relationship, right? But it's the Marlowe. You get this her, and they do like you brought up a good point of, do they make you feel what she's feeling, you know, or to a certain extent, this feeling of not being able to do enough, but at the same time, wanting to do everything. That's something that's like, I think most parents go through. And obviously it's more of a mom thing, but it happens just about in every relationship. Obviously, if the dad's the one who's working all the time, or he's the main breadwinner, whoever the main breadwinner is, usually the other one is the one who picks up the slack or whatever and has to worry about everything else, you know, but the mom has that already on top of it, you know, stigma of like, well, I'm the mom and the mom has to do all this extra stuff, right?
And yes.
They do a really good job of like when she has like a breakdown or whatever, and you know, screams at the teacher, at the principal.
Yeah, right.
And you know, she wants to be the one who bakes the cookies. She wants to be the one, the good mom where everyone likes her. And she doesn't just come in running late to everything, and she actually manages to do stuff on time. But she can't. She's got a full time everything else, full time life with full time kids with full time everything. Like, you can't manage everything. You can't juggle everything around. And she's barely has time to do it now when she has a kid. Like, once 3 months are done and her maternity leave is done, what's she going to do then? Like, she's back at
work. I go back to work.
Yeah, she goes back to work.
Yeah.
Now she's doing 40 hours there or whatever she does. And it's bonkers, like, when you think about
it
that way.
It is bonkers. Another thing you do, you almost brought up, I don't know if you actually, I think you mentioned it, is that how it makes it, it doesn't vilify anyone. Not the kid who's having some sort of emotional problems. Not the husband either, because you could see how easily a movie like this through the POV of the mother being, you know, like, oh, she's alone, suffering.
Well, right. The way you see it is like, you don't even see it. You're absolutely right. It doesn't vilify anybody. Like, you even get the
villainize. The, is vilify the right word? I don't know.
Who cares?
Yeah, okay.
People know what I mean. English is our first language.
No, it's not.
And for none of us here.
For none of us on this table. We all have something
high fives,
in common.
High fives. What?
Okay, we just did it.
Boom,
yeah.
Boom.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyways, bad radio. But what it does is that you just, like, you get it, because you even get a scene where they kind of want to blame the husband for a little bit, like he doesn't do enough or whatever.
Right.
But you're like, no, he's working full time and he's in this weird promotion.
Yeah.
He's in this weird promotion area and it's a rough time at work, and I just have a baby and he can't take time off.
He's got to travel for work too.
He's got to do a lot of stuff for work. He's got to bend backwards for work for this promotion because they need it, because they just had another kid. And it's a weird scenario where, like, well, you can't blame him either. Like, you can't blame anybody here. Like, in the end, it's like,
and
maybe everyone needs to put in more effort.
And
but where do you put that effort if it doesn't come out? And
Gears of War is not going to finish itself.
Gears of War is not going to finish itself.
That's right. Why is always the Gears of War? Do they give permission for every movie
Probably.
It's the only time I see Gears of War, by the way, in movies in background where the husband is playing.
What's
or the
funny
kid's
is
playing
that, because me and Luke saw this movie together. So when I see him playing, because you just see him with a headset and a controller, I was like, my man. I go, that's exactly what I do. And then I saw Gears of War. I was like, no, never mind. I don't play that game.
Yeah. Wait. It's not Overwatch, Ralph.
Right, exactly.
If it's not Overwatch, why even bother? So let's talk about Mackenzie Davis. Or whatever Mackenzie. Tully. Fuck. I guess you just say Tully. I think Tully is definitely the oddball, and she is literally meant there to.
I wanted to slap her the first day I met her. I think though.
The whole free spirit.
The whole free spirit thing.
Oh.
The slapping. Yeah, I had the same thought when she first brought the kid up, Mia, to breastfeed, and wakes her up the
first
time.
She's just like staring at her.
Staring at her. I'm like,
It was really creepy.
And it's funny because there's this idealistic streak in a lot of Jason Reitman's films. Not all of them, of course. And I'm not talking about Diablo Cody. I'm talking about the directors. And Up in the Air, Mackenzie Davis or Tully reminds me so much of the main girl in that movie.
Anna Kendrick.
Thank you. Oh, my God. You knew that, right? I was about to look her up.
Oh.
Look at you.
It's Anna Kendrick.
Nice. Okay.
No need.
All right. You know. The pitches are back. I got it. Anyway, it feels like an idealistic version like her, except that Anna Kendrick has obviously more screen time in different ways, and she reveals her, you know, idealistic tendencies a lot more. But same thing with Tully. She has this bright, bushy tail, white eyes, you know, ideal of the world, and she is in her 20s. It is ideal, but it's definitely the strangest thing in the movie since we've had so much. It's like we got like a lot of chocolate ice cream, and we're getting vanilla now. And it's a very strange comparison. You guys feel the same way?
Yeah, to a certain extent.
Was it a good thing, bad thing?
I mean, of course it's a bad thing because vanilla is the finest of the flavors.
So the white guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but what you really think?
I don't know. I just thought about ice cream.
That's what you get for bringing ice cream scenarios.
What the fuck? If I said anything. But what do you guys think of Tully?
A little too hippie for my taste. Too free-spirited.
I'm asking if you want to fuck her. I'm just saying, what you think about the movie?
Too much of a hippie, too much of a free-spirited. Need to settle the fuck down, grow some roots.
Well, did she convince you that she was a welcome person in Marlo's life?
At first, I don't think so, but I was kind of weird because, like, obviously the service type thing is meant for, like, really affluent people. So what?
It's like when people get au pairs and we just get babysitters.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's like you have an au pair going into like a babysitting job. It's kind of like a weird thing for them too, I think, because it's like the social standard is way different.
Yeah.
Yeah. The way it felt when we first get this thing, because we don't know what's going on besides she's supposed to help out something, and you like it. It felt very hippie-ish the way he brings it up. It's like, well, I'm not just here to help you with the baby. I'm here to help you with all your needs. Yeah. And you're like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
Like, lady, just let me go to sleep. Like, just fucking wake me up when I have to breastfeed. You know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it felt very, it did feel like there's this young person here who's helping with my child, right? But isn't giving me life lessons, right? Which is good because I felt like it was going to be one of those things where, like, well, you know, like, I can heal or help you without, like, you're like 25. I'm like 38.
Kind of like that, remember in the beginning when she goes to a Starbucks type of coffee shop and, she orders decaf, and then the woman next to her is like, oh, yeah, there's still, like, some sprinkles of caffeine in there.
Oh, my God.
And she still orders it.
The first thing Luke says to me, what do you say?
I'm like, fucking, like, mind your own fucking business.
My first thought, too.
And then I love the barista was like, do you still want it? Like, she's like, yeah.
But she hesitates, because, it's an awkward social thing, and... All of a sudden, she has to like account for her actions in a weird way. I hate that feeling. I hate when people do that shit.
I
hate when that happens.
Yeah, it is. It's at home.
Yeah,
this bitch would have been probably drinking decaf also, like, but not in front of anybody else. That's the whole trick. No. The girl who complained.
Well, it's not even that. It's just mind your own business. That's simple.
It is mind your own business.
It's not fucking black tar heroin. Just like, hey, that spoon's a little fucking dirty. Grab a new one.
Use a clean spoon for that heroin. Yeah.
Here's some isopropyl alcohol.
Yeah.
Clean that shit up.
Clearly, we should be teaching a how-to podcast.
Clearly.
What were we going to say, Ralph?
But the thing about Tully is that she doesn't come off as this, like, I'm here to fix your life. No.
No, definitely
not. But she does come off as... naive, especially as you get to know her, and it's
skinny
as
fuck.
And it is because she's young. Yeah, she's a twig, and it is because she's young that you get this, you know.
Yes.
So, and you can see that Marlo's reaction is just like, "Oh, you don't know the world yet."
Like, kind of incredulous, and she says that a bunch of times.
You haven't been beaten down by the world yet,
right? And she does make it seem like it's going to happen sooner or later, and not like as an if, but a when.
Yeah, no, it's when. It's right. Always going to happen.
Right.
There's always a when.
And in many ways, I don't. I agree with her, you know. And in other ways, even if I didn't agree with her, I can see why she would think that. there is towards the end of the film. I shall say that. But I overall liked Tully's invitation to this life, to this family. I think in retrospect, having seen the whole thing, I think there are some, there's a one glaring problem I had with it, which we'll get to. But besides those points, I think that Tully does a good job of playing, like, almost like, what's that movie? Like a Mistress America type of person. Not like that type of person, but like a certain New Yorker type that she plays really well, that you can't really super identify, but they are idealistic as well as, you know, also like, you know, take charge in a different way and also a little more egomaniacal in a different way. And she doesn't show those colors until later on in the movie and slowly but surely. But I liked it. And I overall was convinced by Marlowe's and Tully's relationship, or friendship, I should say, as the movie progressed. There's one scene that threw me off for sure, which involves sex. And we'll get to that. But should we just get to that now, I guess, for spoilers?
You might as well get to spoilers.
Anything you just want to say before we get to spoilers, in case people want to skip? You know, I've had sex. All right, I guess that's it. Spoilers for Tully starting right now.
Do you know what a night nanny is? Oh. Okay, you know what? Everybody does it. It's just like a regular nanny, except they come at night. You know, they stay over for a few weeks or a month, and they take care of the baby at night so mom and dad can get some sleep. It's no big deal.
I don't want a stranger in my house bonding with my newborn every night. It's like a Lifetime movie where the nanny tries to kill the family and the mom survives and she has to walk with a cane at the end.
Right, well, we had a night nanny.
I don't remember that.
The reason you don't remember it is because she only came at night.
Craig, please tell me you didn't hire me one of those people.
You have a lot going on. Get over yourself. Call her. She comes highly recommended.
So, how much did it throw you off, that the whole waitress get-up scene, sex scene with the husband?
Kind of out there.
The first time you saw that. By the way, the first time I saw it in a not crowded theater, but definitely a lot of couples. And one of them was like, laugh. You know, the guy who was laughing the most, you could always tell the one guy that was laughing harder. He was like, what? When it was actually happening? And he thought, because it looks like they're just going to joke around with him. It looks like they're going to wake him up and just play, like, kind of like mess with him, not exactly fuck him.
That's exactly what it was, yeah.
And then it carried on and it became like this. Sort of like twosome, threesome, or two, like a, you know, like twosome plus and a half or something. When she was going to direct
twosome
him.
Twosome plus voyeur.
She was going to direct Tully how to do it. Like, I'll tell you what he likes best and stuff. Okay. It happened. And in one way, I'm like, okay, they're strangely more forward thinking in their relationship when, you know, because he's probably been horny for months and she can't, or hasn't been at least. Right. I guess I can see it. Not too believable in my lifetime experience myself, but I can see it. And I'm like, okay, I guess the movie wants me to buy this. And what does it mean for the movie? And it really threw me off because I didn't know what to think about that scene. Well, I'll get into the ending, of course. But what did you guys think?
I was kind of shocked. Like, do they have that kind of an open relationship or some shit? Like, that was not something I was expecting. And then I figured, like, then, like, the next scene is, like, when he's, like, kind of, like, thanking the brother-in-law. It's like, oh, yeah, we got that night nurse. Man. Like, he kind of wanted to, like, talk about it or something.
Yeah, he wanted to mention it.
Like, that, like, but, and at that point, I'm like, oh, okay, so they kind of had, like, a threesome type-ish scenario.
Yeah, they definitely play it out that way.
That's,
the movie plays it out. And I'm like,
oh, that's kind of.
Plays it out that the brother-in-law did the same thing?
Yeah, like, you know.
No.
Oh, yeah.
The movie plays it off that
yeah.
that the threesome kind of happened.
Oh, yes.
In reality, it didn't.
Yes. And then the next morning, when he asked, like, should we talk about yesterday? And she's like, we don't have to.
Right. I think it was just a different thing in general because she put on an outfit.
Yes. It's very strange. And let's talk about the ending so we can talk about this scene in fucking context now. Is that the ending is that the big surprise. I didn't know there was going to be a surprise, by the way, in this movie.
Neither did I?
I really.
That came out of fucking
so life. That's a clear surprise. Surprise.
So it got all of us.
It's not quite like Anon, which we'll get to. But like, yeah, so Tully she's non-existent, right?
She's a figment of her fucking imagination.
It's Marlowe's.
Former self.
Former self, essentially. And. I guess the movie does imply a psychotic break of some sort, frustrated, you know, sleep deprived break of,
Because the doctor says, like,
of the psyche. Yeah. The doctor says, like, she hasn't fucking slept at all, man.
Right. She's been, and like, apparently she had a thing after the second child that she had an episode. So
a depression, which I've heard that happens sometimes with mothers. Like, they get really depressed after.
This is why you need to eat the placenta. It helps with postpartum depression.
You're
talking
for that. You're like, okay. So knowing that, I think, how does that make that sex scene for you? Is the movie playing too many tricks to just get around that reveal? Or does it feel manipulative? Does it feel, I'm going to say, does it feel in any way negative? Does it detract anything? Because I feel like I've only been 24 hours and I've seen it, almost literally, and I don't know yet. I don't know what to think. Exactly. I haven't really put a judgment, a fingerprint on it. But I'm leaning towards, it's because the husband sees it just her, right? He doesn't imagine it.
Right.
Right.
I'm leaning towards this being manipulative. And the movie's manipulating me as opposed to feeling that natural, like he would ask that question the next morning, like, you know, or that he would ask about and have weird looks with the brother-in-law. But it doesn't, you know?
Maybe it, like, you know, it brought out, like, kind of Black Mirror now. Let's go back to that for a second.
Okay, sure.
You know how people are replaying their greatest things from, like, when they had, like, the best sex?
Yeah.
This could have been, like, her awakening. Like, she went back to, like, when they first started, like, fucking, like, going balls out, like doing it like fucking rabbits and shit.
Yeah.
Maybe she brought that back to the table and it just blew his mind. He's like, do you want to talk about it? No.
It's been so long that he forgot. Right. You're just asking, like, are you okay?
Right. He's used to getting just the vanilla and he just got a fucking chip.
So you're buying it. So you bought the movie.
Again,
and,
can I finish my...
No.
He's so used to getting a vanilla, he just got a fucking banana sundae.
You know. Banana split?
Banana split sundae, yeah.
So you want me to let you finish that sentence?
Yes.
Yeah, I already knew what you were going to say. So, Ralph.
Hey, guys, you want to get some ice cream after this?
No. No. Yes.
Okay.
Ralph.
Buying.
No, So...
In that case, yes.
I agree. It is something that is done as almost like a red herring kind of thing for us to get hoodwinked by it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's done well. It's not done...
No, it's not done bad.
It's not done bad. Well. Exactly. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, I've seen movies do it way worse. I've seen movies way better. I've seen it done just as brown, same as this. I don't have any qualms with this. It just kind of leads you to, like, I think the movie in the end wants you to feel like there's two people here. And I think the movie, that's what the movie tries to. So the movie reinforces that for you. With this scene, hopefully, right? It's still skeptic. Technically, it doesn't really enforce you because it's just, they never say, was that person this and that. We just imply that, right? We go along with what we think it is that. And then, but for us, it makes us just reinforce us so we can build that relationship later. So the end feels better for us. We get more, that's kind of more fucked up. That she was actually broken instead of being fixed.
Oh, is it? Yeah, because we think the whole time. I mean, the power of the reveal is that we think the whole time she is accessing and making a friend and relating to someone that she never probably thought she could relate to, someone so young. And I get that. And that was a special reveal of it because it takes that away and says it's been a downfall that she hasn't realized yet. As opposed to the downfall that she has been realizing before that, which is the frustrations of daily,
right.
The daily frustrations, the lack of sleep. I mean, she's been getting those also. She just doesn't know she's getting them. And that's weird and fucked up. And of course, it blows up in her face with the car accident.
Exactly.
You're right. I agree with that part. I just, I feel like looking back on it, I think it detracts something overall than the initial response I had with this wife trying to make her day-to-day better, even if it's just boring. Like, boring better, not boring bad, boring frustrated, or boring, like, trying to catch up to life all the time, you know?
Well, I think what I like about the movie, what I like about that is that, because thinking about it later, is she's trying to fix everything that's going on. Remember? Like, Tully tells her, hey, like, I'm not here to just only help you with the baby, I'm here to help you fix yourself.
Yeah.
And she does that. And part of that is fixing her marriage. So,
yeah.
Her doing this, you know, her husband, a sex-deprived person, right, who needs his batteries recharged, as they say.
Yeah.
makes sense. Like, it doesn't detract.
I like how he never complains about it either. He almost did that once.
He almost did, yeah. But it doesn't detract from him. Like, it if anything, it just reinforces it. So that's the way I see it.
Okay. So. Okay. Well, that's good that you saw it that way. I wish I could see more that way. But I don't know. Maybe it's
You're still young.
I'm still young. Right. I saw
I'm looking for older than all of us, but yeah.
Yes.
Right.
In the kids in the kids area. I'm basically a kid. That's fine. I don't need a kid. All right. Okay, I can buy that. What else about the last half of the movie we want to talk about? Unless you want
to. There were two things that kind of bothered me about the movie.
What?
That I felt were a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
A is that the husband really never meets Tully in the beginning.
Oh, did you find that strange yourself in the moment? In the moment,
like when you get when like he gets to the, like you know she gets into bed like oh yeah the night nurse is here and he's like oh okay like wouldn't you kind of want to meet her? Scenario.
I think
that was weird.
I think Ron Livingston sold it to me that he just wanted to go to a fucking bed.
Maybe.
I don't know how he did it.
But then also the very next morning she wakes up. The only reason she wakes up is because she hears the baby monitor.
Mm-hmm.
So you think you know the. Night nurse would be like, hey, you know, I'm leaving. Just a heads up, blah, blah, blah. Kind of give him some notice.
No. Is the next scene after that she, that Tully is gone?
Gets the, no, she gets the baby. She gets being fed.
Uh-huh.
And then the next morning she wakes up in to the baby monitor thing.
Right. So what's strange about that again?
Like you don't you think the night nurse would have been like, hey, I'm leaving?
No, that's the beautiful part about the night nurse thing is that none of us are rich enough to know what a night nanny is or what they would do. So we
it's just obscure enough. So the rich 10%
to you say that, but for them it's like, well, this is normal. And you're like, I guess so.
So you're saying that the rich 10% know the truth and like, oh, that's fake. She would tell them.
There's this throwaway line that's in there. They're like ninjas.
Yeah,
that little throwaway line for me is just like, okay.
No, I didn't think about that second point, Luke, but the first point, I'm with you. And then after a few scenes, a few nights like this, I did notice that the husband hasn't met her yet.
Right, but then there's like this excuse because he goes traveling.
That's right. When the traveling happened, it didn't feel like an excuse to me, of course, because he already pre-said that already about his promotion being that involved travel. So I'm like, okay.
What I'm saying is that there's an excuse for him not to meet her.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
But the second thing, it doesn't bother me as much.
The movie does a good job
It did bother me the first time. I was like, I would agree the same thing. I was like, well, can I meet her?
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to
A stranger taking care of my kid? Yeah, exactly. What the fuck?
But at the same time, it's the third kid. Does he really care? Like,
do you really care about? I mean, you only have one. Okay, can you see not caring
on third? Issue I had.
Bitch, you care. You're a father. You know what?
There's a third issue.
Okay.
At one point, because obviously the brother-in-law prepaid for this, right? So do you not think that the night nurse would have been giving him a call? Hey, blah, blah, blah. They called me. I'm going to start the service now. Whatever.
Well, see, there's a scene where, like, and I'm not trying to forgive the movie for anything, right? But I had the same problem also. And I guess I should have kind of hit more towards me when the brother brings up, oh, yeah, he called the night nurse. I'm like, oh, yeah. It would have been more like, oh, yeah, it's awesome. I didn't think she'd do it, right? But it would have been more like, yeah, I know, because I'm getting billed for it, right? It should have been more of that response.
Yeah, that's true.
Now that you think about it, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have this, what's it called? Like, you could have just, when she does make the phone call, because she pulls out this post-it note in the car, right? We could have just been like, well, they just made a set of plan. Like, oh, well, your person already paid ahead of time, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to worry about the bill. Like, as soon as the service is done, I'm going to bill him. Don't worry about it.
That was the thing I was going to talk about, it's really.
We didn't need the details of that information.
That's too much of a convenience filmmaking wise that they didn't show her making the call or at least not make that call. Because now that we know that the nanny was never there, the fuck she. Why expend the effort unless you're trying to only trick us?
Well, would have been really cool. There, exactly, right? What would have been really cool is that she just lost the post-it and in the post-it it was just like some stupid information that she had and it was a different pink post-it or whatever.
Yeah, maybe.
And that would have been cool.
Or if it was a different color the whole time.
She just breaks down going like, well, I got to do it myself.
Or if it was a different color the whole time and only if you were paying attention would you know, right?
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
Some movies do that, like when your face kind of reveals. Anything about the ending, the car accident, the night in New York? Also, there's a connection between the opening and the coffee shop right after that whole thing with the lady. She meets like an old flame, maybe?
She meets her old roommate.
Old roommate.
They had a falling out.
Yes.
And it felt like they were kind of like into it.
That's why I said flame.
It did feel like a flame thing because they talked to each other like they were in like whatever. But at the same time, and then they bring up towards the end, of the movie. Like, this is where my best friend lived, and
yeah.
she was really open, and this and that, and blah, yeah. blah, blah. And, yeah, I don't know. It was a weirdly weird thing. She obviously wanted to live her back, her past, you know, fix her mistakes that she did, but at the same yeah. time, be who she was before.
Yeah.
Or who she thought she
was. And I like how she tells herself, I mean, Tully tells her, that, she tells herself, that, about the glory of, you know, living a boring life successfully because of, we touched on this already here, you, Ralph, I mean, about the, how life is that way, and because it is that way, it means you're succeeding. It doesn't mean that you're failing, right?
Right.
The movie does make that point, and it does kind of like puts all of the day-to-day montage-y bad stuff, you know, from the kid kicking the backseat to anything, right? To her driving in general, the kids around, that makes you feel a little better, even though it's still pretty shitty in the moments, right? So I like the movie does that. It does give time for that line, I guess. Maybe it's probably the key line in the script. I don't know.
Maybe.
But, yeah, I liked also how as soon as Tully fell asleep, she fell asleep in the car. Very, you know, foretelling. And, yeah, I liked that. I was really worried, though, they were going to go with I thought they were going to go before the actual reveal. I thought they were going to go with the whole tragedy angle of like a Lifetime movie at the end. I'm like, oh no.
I thought she. I didn't see there was a bridge there until they actually make it out of the bridge.
Right.
And yeah. I was like, oh, this is the underwater scene. I immediately made that.
What about mermaids?
Huh?
It's just
the whole water thing.
It was the whole water thing. The whole
a lot of mermaids.
Thing. And there's a lot of mermaids references in general. Like yeah. Daughters always watching something with mermaids.
And gigolos.
And stuff like that, yeah.
And the gigolos.
Yeah. I can see why it would be appealing for, you know, adults with parents, you know, don't have a lot of time to watch, like, trashy television as background watching things because maybe it's perfect for the exact tone that they want.
Yeah.
Nothing too serious, nothing too crazy, just fucking that, people talking with their lives.
It's called Scrubs.
By the way, Scrubs has been on, and I've been watching it all again.
It's amazing.
What's been on?
Scrubs.
Where?
Comedy Central.
Oh, I don't have that. That's okay. I've seen it like twice. It's good.
Only?
Yeah, only twice. Anything else you guys want to point out? And you guys like this duo pair, this writer director? They've done the last three together.
What was the other two?
They did Juno
and Young Adult.
I didn't see Young Adult.
Oh, you should watch it, guys. It's really good.
Guess
really
what movie we're not going to watch?
Young Adult.
And they're all very different versions. Like, oh, they're all lead heroines, right?
But guess what movie we did watch?
Juno.
Are you guys working on a shtick, an act?
Maybe.
Comes natural.
Are you going to upstage me at the wedding?
Perhaps.
Are you going to with the speech? I'm going first. I'm going to go first. All right, so I think that's it for Tully.
I think Ralph should go first.
Do we recommend it? We do. I know. He was talking to me in the car about that. It does make more sense that you go first, but I don't want you to go first.
Okay.
You know, so.
Set the blow bar.
Okay, Tully. Tully. Do we recommend this movie?
I do recommend the movie.
Definitely see it.
So why don't you watch Young Adult?
But just so you know, see it after you have children. Don't see it before.
No, see it. We have too many people in this world. If it detracts a few, that's fine.
Touché.
Yeah. Touché. Especially you. All right. So that's our review for Tully. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our second film, which Luke has not seen, actually.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix original film called Anon.
I guess I will be Anon be here.
Anon be. Jesus, get a job. Stay with us.
Last night when I was chasing her, that's where it starts. What I see changes. The stairs stretch. It's an optical illusion, which later disappears from my record. And it doesn't end there. At this moment, I'm seeing a train at the platform. A train that isn't there.
Placing a moving image in real time. Who can hack a human being? How do we stop this?
To find a hack kit, we hire one.
What can I do for you?
Girl is a blank slate, no digital footprint.
She makes her living covering up secrets. She's a master editor who can erase the unwanted act in the record.
Most of all, she erases herself.
And now her clients are getting erased.
This level of anonymizing makes all crime possible. Anonymity is the enemy.
Someone is killing my customers, trying to make it look like it's me.
She's playing you.
I'm not safe. Neither are you.
We can't believe our eyes. The system doesn't work.
All clear.
In a world without anonymity or crime, a detective meets a woman who threatens their security. Sorry. I know I went everywhere around there. This movie is called Anon, whatever you call it. This is directed and written by Andrew Niccol, starring Clive Owen and a bunch of other people. Clive Owen.
Stephanie's so excited.
Amanda Seyfried. Jonathan Potts. Afia Bennett. Morgan Allen. A bunch of people, if you know them. This is a Netflix original movie. Sci-fi thriller. You believe you told me it was the guy who did Gattaca, right?
Andrew Niccol. And Lord of War.
And Lord of War. That's right. He also was the writer in The Truman Show. And just quick IMDb. So yeah, I chose this Netflix original movie for us to watch. Overall, I'll give first impressions for this one. And then I'll ask Oscar, since Luke did not watch this movie.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck that guy, indeed. So yeah, first impressions was that I didn't know what I was watching at first. It's obviously an alternate reality or some distant future, something crazy. I had a lot of, resemblance to that. Now I'm drawing a blank on the name of the movie with Final Cut, I think it was called, or something.
With
Robin Williams.
And Meg Ryan. Was it Meg Ryan in that movie?
I don't know.
That's in the cut.
Something else.
Sorry, my bad.
It's where he does. Is it with Robin Williams? Where he does the video.
The memory editing. Yeah. He knows everyone's secrets.
Exactly. Like something. It reminded me a lot of like that. Only this is to the extent of where, the vision, everything that's like. It's like almost your eyes aren't your eyes. Like you're almost a computer itself, and it's like it's kind of like what like the world. Government world would want the world to be, because they're like, oh, well, we get to do everything and there's no crime. Mm-hmm. But in reality, like, that's not how humans should act and live. So it's that was a really cool concept. Overall, I had fun watching the movie. I just felt like, sad to say, that some parts were still kind of like meh. Like our main actor was like an outlier. You know, like there's none other type of person who's like that person, and it felt like none of his fellow detectives would be even remotely near as decent or as smart as him to even, you know, use his wits, I guess. And almost feel like there's a human element to him, and maybe his tragedy is the reason he is more human than most people. I don't know, but it's kind of weird.
Okay.
What did you think of the movie?
I liked it. I had fun with it. That's the main thing about Andrew Niccol films in general. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not as good as Gattaca. I still think that's his prized.
I really do enjoy Gattaca.
Achievement, and the whole movie holds up too. The whole idea of DNA and identity.
Sure.
It's also really good acting. It's a good movie. Somehow everything worked a lot better than even this movie. But Anon. I like the movie a lot. I wish it delved deeper into its concepts, but it's not going to be Annihilation at all in that form. It doesn't deep deeper. It doesn't ask the serious, doesn't ask the real Westworld connections questions.
No, but you know,
but it does. Well, I should say it doesn't. I mean, I should say it does ask some of them, but it never answers them. I should say
I think what he does is that he makes a world, and he's good at world building, and he just. Gives right. us a thing that happens in that.
Because in the end, this movie is simply a serial killer whodunit movie.
Yeah,
it's really all it is. And unfortunately, the less interesting aspect of this movie is the whodunit serial killer aspect for me. And I found that to be, you know, trite and boring, and not exciting at all. And no spoilers, obviously, yet, but it did not appeal to me when I found out what all that was. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But besides those points, again, the world building was awesome. Mana Seyfried, pretty good. You know, I didn't like. Usually, I find her pretty annoying in movies. Not at all in this one. And I wish Clive Owen did more than his usual like shtick. But he was doing his usual shtick and he was doing it well.
But it worked out for the movie.
Yeah, because that's what he's good at, and it's good.
Yeah, he does have that like I'm either very depressed face.
Yes.
Or I just don't care.
Right.
Which was really good for the movie.
Yes, I mean. And that's why in Children of Man, he's like both, you know.
Right.
And so those parts are good. There's some great details in this movie. They do concentrate and focus on some of those world-building details that really flourish in nice little ways. Sometimes for no reason, like they'll show it to you just to show you the world. Other times it's connecting to something, you know, about the plot, whatever.
Right.
And otherwise, I like the idea of this world where everyone has to tell the truth and no one knows how to lie because all your AV, your sound and video, audio-visual life is recorded at all times.
Well, what's really cool is that you get a hint of the movie right away in the beginning. Did you get right when the movie starts?
No, remind me.
The very beginning of the movie, there's like a glitch, like if your screen got messed up.
Oh yeah, and now I missed it. I guess I didn't pay attention.
It ends like that, too.
Oh, I remember the ending, yes.
But it starts like that.
Yeah.
That's how it started.
I like the ending of this movie. We'll get to that. Yeah, it has some good stuff in it. It is kind of it is just like a very fun movie though, and it's a fun like. It's weird to consider like what would police force look like in this future or whatever, and it seems like they don't even look that necessary, but because everything is so there, it's all there all the time. It's like they're all learning how to be detectives again when this real smart murderer is getting away with murder and not having his, you know, identity revealed, motivations, or anything like that. So, yeah, I guess I liked it. I did like it. What do you want to delve into first about this movie?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That one thing.
I guess let's delve into the world aspect of, more like his job, what they do. Because although they're technically police,
mm-hmm.
It's weird the kind of power that he has.
Right,
he has the power. Like the problem with this movie is that everyone feels robotic, but human still because they still have the same human issues. Right, which is like this person stole something from me. Right, and then and everything feels monotone and robotic.
Right, because they have this montage, this like intro montage of this guy, the main character, Clive Owen, as a detective. They have this montage of him going through a bunch of cases, right? A bunch of people who are complaining. One people is about stealing, right?
Right, but like the only human element, and this is why I feel like the most human person in this movie is Clive Owen and our main, our Anon, what's her face?
Anon.
Anon or whatever. Her, besides those two, I feel like everybody else is almost just robotic in nature. They don't feel human-esque. Like, they have human features because they look human.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the stuff they act, it feels like no one has feelings. And the two people who do have feelings are the only two people that are protagonists.
Well, I feel like they're like living an existence where if you don't know someone, they kind of seem robotic because everything is recorded. It's like everyone has an excuse not to remember anything because they can relive
it. Well,
we don't have to memorize our phone number.
Sure. Well, right? What's interesting is, yeah, I guess. What's interesting is that what's funny is that the whole a fight or an argument could be ended by, hey, show me the last 30 minutes of what you did.
Right.
And you're like, well, that's like, why would I want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
But no, what I say is like, what I say about the human thing is, like, there's that one scene that gives you, like, the Clive Owen-esque, what his type of persona is, where the girl's like, someone stole my jewelry. And she's like, well, this is the recording of your maid, and your maid saw it, and nothing happened. Right?
Yeah.
And then the other officer's like, well, why didn't you show him what happened afterwards? She's like, because she ended up paying her, she ended up, you know, pawning that and paying her rent for the next like 3 months,
because I guess he'd seen that footage already, or something.
He did see the footage, right? Exactly, because he can access that. And I was like, "Well, what kind of power do you have? Like, you could just..."
That seems like morally, like that's So you can break the law if the guy thinks you're morally okay.
Right, but also what kind of power as a detective do you have? Because like, you have obviously a lot more power.
Well, I think a detective's power is simply that he can access other people's history when they only can give it to you if they want.
Right, that's what it looked like. But that's at the same time, like, it's just like, okay, so if that's weird, like that's kind of messed up. I felt like he had too much power, but it's also like a human thing that he did, right? Well, that person's a jerk or whatever, you know, like go ahead and steal from her.
Yeah.
That's morally, you know, and stuff like that. But everybody else, like in the movie, the only other person maybe is his other partner, or the other detective, the one who's lead on the case, on the big case, who sometimes has like, listen, man, I'm trying to help you out. But at the same time, not really. He feels more robotic than all of them. It's weird.
And I thought it was his boss.
It looked like his boss, but I think he was a detective also.
I'm sure he was, but I think it was about like one level higher or something.
Yeah, well, they're both detective grade one, I think. So that just assumes.
Oh, first class?
Whatever. Yeah, first class. That's what it was. Yeah. So I don't know. It felt kind of weird. Like, and I do get like the movie's kind of playing out like, well, you're being watched at all times. So yeah, like you should act certain ways. And you get all this information just by walking.
I guess
by
what, somebody. What I should ask you is that if let's talk about the technology that they're introducing.
See, that's what I was going to start with because I guess.
But I mean, like, if this world existed here, can you see everyone acting roughly, if not the same way that people are in this movie? Like having this technology being born, let's say a full generation into people, maybe more probably, because everyone has it.
Yeah,
except for these hackers who don't. Can you believably see that? I guess that's the real question, whether or not how much you want to buy this movie or not, right?
I mean, to a certain extent, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I could see some of this stuff for sure.
Because if you grow up, because like to me and you, maybe this is kind of to me it's atrocious. I can't ever fathom that kind of world.
Neither can
I. I mean, in a way where, I mean, I can understand it, but I don't want to ever have it. You know,
right, well, the way it feels like, it's like you're born and they have to either implant you with it away.
That was my next question after all.
Because there was one scene where they have like, oh,
a baby.
The baby thing.
The baby as a witness.
The baby is a witness, yeah. Exactly. You're just like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really weird.
Yeah. How does the baby give access? Give me some milk. Yeah, I was going to ask a question about that, but I'm saving it for a little bit. So the way it works, I mean, to me, it's atrocious because it privacy is out the window, 100%, 110%, and that annoys me to no end. But if you grew up with it on already, and everyone around you has it, there is no need for privacy. That's the idea. There is no need. It's like a tempered down, simmered down version of Fahrenheit 451 or 1984 or any of those kind of stories where the government owns everyone completely. It isn't as crazy as those books or movies. But it's like a toned down version of it, you know, slightly toned down. It's like basically like a Black Mirror episode, extended, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it did feel like that.
Right. If this was a Black Mirror episode, they would ask more questions about the tech.
They would, yeah.
Which it does too. It doesn't say nothing, but and it wouldn't be maybe a murder mystery, or maybe it would. I think it could honestly be a Black Mirror episode, and just you know, written a little better, maybe. Goes to show you how much I love that show. The question is that I'm glad, I'm glad. Are you okay with? The movie not explaining this tech at all, like it's how it's implemented, anything like that.
Yeah, we're in it already. This, like I said, the movie, the director, the choices is made is that we don't have to pander to the crowd because we live in this world, and for us to explain this tech would be like, yeah, everybody knows that already. So why would I have to explain it to you? So yeah, I like movies that do that.
Yeah, you like it in this case.
I like it in this case. Well, okay. Because if there's something that's new,
good,
it makes sense for some people to explain it, right? And I was kind of hoping for an explanation at the same time. Someone would go in like, well, how the way that technology works is this and that. But at the same time, I was actually excited. I was actually kind of glad that it didn't happen. Just for the fact that...
Me too.
Like, you don't need it. Like, you know, I want it, sure. But at the same time, I think by getting it, sometimes depending on how it's delivered, it just comes out bad. And most of the time it does.
You know what's a future sci-fi movie that makes two horrible mistakes that this movie doesn't have that also came from Netflix?
Oh, what?
What Happened to Monday? And the two things is that, one, they over-explain everything about the world before.
They did.
To their detriment, too. They didn't have to explain all that shit. And the stuff that they should have explained, they never did. Remember, we had problems with that movie. We reviewed it on the show, by the way, guys.
We did.
Check it out in the past. And the other mistake they had is it's about the world and like the way they tapped into the world they were in. They had to make it about the end of their cycle. It had to be earth-shattering in what happened to Monday. It's about really just this case and how this one person is able to kill people and getting away with it.
Yeah, the only thing earth-shattering in this is for our protagonist.
Yeah, and that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And that should say more about the world in general.
And I love the ending, because the ending is kind of a... It's actually kind of a tone that we're... The movie in general is the tone of, like, lack of privacy is just being open to everything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what we're in right now with our social media and everything else.
How, I mean, yeah, it's definitely a big discussion.
That's basically what it is, how your privacy is and with net neutrality and all that other stuff. So yeah, it's a big conversation. It's kind of like bringing it up without bringing it up, but at the same time.
See, this is stuff that made the movie fun and easier to swallow the other mistakes or things they didn't tap into because it did a good job doing it.
Right.
Good stuff.
Right.
I really liked it for those reasons, and I really liked. There's this one of my favorite scenes in the spoilers, but it's like it happens after he makes one fatal mistake, and there's like a torturing thing that happens with him and his technology eyeball thing. And it's really cool and kind of fucked up and really ingenious in a way. And I really liked how they did all that. It also reminded me, again, to say Westworld because I've been watching it, but also like the way the robots access memories is that they access it as if they were there in real life. Right. This is like the same thing for humans because everything is replayed exactly right, you know?
Yeah.
Now, the backstory of the detective also is that he is almost like a film noir character. He has, you know, ex-lover who left him because, you know, he couldn't take the loss of his child, that it was his fault, right? Very well. And did you like that? Was it cheesy for you, tropey?
I felt tropish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too, a little bit.
There's a couple scenes that feel tropish. And I think we might as well get into spoiler if we want to.
Yeah, we're about to. Because I was going to say, they do use it, some of that, to good effect in the movie later on. But overall, pretty tropey. But we recommend this movie before we get into spoilers?
Yeah, I would recommend the movie.
It's fun.
Yeah.
All right, so spoilers for Ant and Anon starting right now.
So strange to look at you and see nothing. No name, no data, nothing. You must get a lot of stares.
I don't go out much, and when I do, I keep my head down. People think it's a mistake.
Why not use an alias?
I don't want to exist to someone else. I don't want to exist.
You have a name.
I do.
Is that it?
I don't mean to be rude. I got another customer.
What about people with memories of you? Like me. You can't get rid of memories.
I can think of a way.
So
everybody does.
I love when we do that. So the scene I was talking about is, of course, after she finds out he's a cop and, you know, runs off. He starts being tortured by deleting all the memories. That was fucked up. And he has the wife.
Replaying the whole time.
And replaying the death scene over and over again.
The wife being messed up.
Yeah. Not to mention almost shooting a person, almost falling an elevator shaft. And that really, one of my favorite scenes of the movie from the beginning relates to that scene, is how he was tricked into thinking he was in a train when there wasn't a train there.
That was really good.
That was messed up. Because in the camera, the way, like, why did you get hit by a train? Did you see it coming? I'm like, oh, no, he didn't. Because the next scene, they explain why. I'm like, oh, that's fucked up. This guy could kill everyone. He could just make everyone fall off a cliff whenever you want, you know?
Right.
And that's really fucked up. And that's where I wanted a little more than the nothing we got about the tech.
Sure.
Because, of course, like, how can you create something that's so vulnerable?
Yeah.
Right? Technology, it can be so vulnerable.
It's one of those
hackable
things.
And
it's interesting because it's a complacency issue. So I see it. This is like, all of these what's it called, big companies getting hacked and losing all of the private information, right, out there, all the leaked data from the people, like Expedia getting hacked or whatever. All those guys they got complacent, right? If you don't keep upgrading your technology. Right. If you don't stay up to date with things, then it's easier for someone to get into, after drawing so many times, you know, it's it's not new anymore. So people can just keep trying and trying and trying until you get into it. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like the same thing. It's just like, well, it works. No one's wanted us to try anything. So why do we have to upgrade it? And it felt like that a little bit also. Not that they ever bring it up or they ever need to, but if there's like there's one scene when they're all gathered up and the all the cops and they're just like, well, like we never thought that would happen and this and that. And you're like, well, yeah, it's bound to if you guys never like something's about to change. Like nothing works 100% of the 100. You know,
yeah, that's what's frightening about it. The trust in it,
right? Exactly.
But also, you could say that if Facebook got hacked today. Massively world, you know, that kind of thing, people will still be checking their Facebook, is my point. You know what I mean? And
right.
posting things. So I mean, are we that far off from that? I don't know, man. Because you know, Facebook is a daily life for most people, so.
I also like the movie. I like some things that our main Clive Owen does in the movie. I can't think of his name, but like when he kept his eyes closed, for example.
That's
a really good scene.
That's when he escapes the cop, right?
Yeah. And that felt fine. That felt great, right?
Yeah.
But there's the other scene where he's using his intuition or like to know where the guy is by seeing what the other guy's seeing. And like, oh, and he shoots when he shoots the killer.
Yeah.
And you're just like, that felt tropish. Like, it wasn't, even though it was
like. What do you mean tropish? That's not tropey.
Huh?
That's not tropey.
It felt like I'm shooting with my eyes closed kind of thing in the dark. It felt like I'm watching Silence of the Lambs and she uses her, like, you know, like that moment of having to, like, feel where the person is. And it felt like that. It felt like I've seen this in movies many times before.
Okay.
That felt in a way tropish to me like that. It was still original. But we saw it already once, and I think something took away from that already once.
See, I think because we have seen it many times with other victims completely failing to see what was happening, and he's seen all the footage, that he was able to overcome it because he's seen it so many times.
That's what's so funny is that that's the other thing that kind of angers me about the movie, because everyone acts so robotic. No one came to think of like, oh, I'm seeing that they're seeing me or something like that.
I was going to say that as a negative point. That annoyed me.
That is a negative point.
After the fourth time, like, oh my God, can't you guys figure it
out
by now?
No one tries swinging. No one tries doing
it. No one does
anything.
Someone's
getting close to me.
Right. Even the first murder, I'm like, what are you doing? Can you, I'm like, what do you mean? What are you doing? Get the fuck.
Right, exactly.
Run in any direction or something.
Anything. You know? Right, yeah. Yes. Well, that was funny. So, I don't know. It just felt really weird.
Yeah, I think I think if they focus a little more on how that would look like in a movie setting, like if they instead of showing you the killer's POV to hide it, maybe show like I don't know. I mean, maybe blackness or show like a memory when they don't want to show the memory, because it seems like this hacker could do a lot. You don't have to show his own POV. I know he's doing it as a trick to not show his face, but at the same time, you could just blind them or do something that doesn't look. I mean, it looks cool, creative. Like thinking, oh, yeah, it'd be cool if you see the creator, the killer is about to kill you. I can see that in a writer's room, right? Thinking that's cool, but like it doesn't play really well, logically speaking. And these people should be defending themselves more than the zero times they do.
Right.
But in the end, though, they did make it work ultimately for me because Clive Owen's character was able to learn from those mistakes.
Right.
So but that's why I didn't find it too bad.
Like I said, but it just feels like Anand and Clive Owen. Are the only two.
I mean, the killer sucked. I really didn't like that.
Right. It just.
I mean, his reveal, whatever.
Like, his reveal was kind of cool, especially like his reveal was.
I like how Anand tricked him.
Yeah, no.
That was cool.
I like that too, but that was a good reveal. That's what I meant about the reveal. But what I liked also is that how he implanted the whole time to be there. Like, oh, I got recommended by the chief of police to come in. It's like. Look, because he's like, how did he get into it, working with us?
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, yeah, you recommended him. He's like, I never recommended anybody. And you're like, well, the video that I saw of everything happening, you did recommend them. That's a really cool thing.
Yes.
I thought that was a cool exploit, like when you get all that information. But overall, the villain was just so dumb.
And it's so dumb because this movie treats it like a whodunit mystery, and we see the guy like twice. We don't know enough about him at all. The only 2.5 characters are visible in this movie, and the two main characters cannot be the killer because it would deter everything from the movie. So the half character, right. Which is his partner, maybe boss, whatever we said, is the only person we see enough of where we can get something out of him, like, oh, he's maybe this kind of guy. But everyone else, nothing. Zero things about him. They're all anagrams or whatever that word is. Amalgamations are nothing. And it sucked. Sucky ending. Our sucky reveal, I mean, of the killer. I didn't like his identity at all. I wish it was just someone. Also, like, to make it his, to be this smart to do all this shit, and for such a dumb reason, to just kill Anand's, you know, ex-sexual partners because he's jealous and in love with her, it's just a dumb reason. That was the reason I got anyway. Am I missing anything right
now? No, I wasn't missing anything either.
I mean, it's like...
That's what I took out of it.
I mean, that's stupid. That just doesn't play really well. It didn't play really well for me. And I didn't like it. Because ultimately, the stuff that I ended up liking, which is the ending also, is the whole thing with Anand. Not about him, her sleeping with him or anything like that. But, which is a pretty hot scene, by the way. But yeah, it was just her thing in general, her life goal, her mission, and what she wants to do. Not politically speaking, just saying how she wants to live her life is really anti this world.
Yeah.
And she does her best, and I like the way she does it, and I like the way her character is built around.
Yeah, I like that too. Well, I like the ending, the very ending, when she says, like, well, like, why do you live your life like that? And he's like, well, like, what? Why do you want to live your life private? He's like, just because... Like,
no, she said something about, like, you guys think that because I want to live like this that I'm hiding something, but it's just something I don't want to tell you.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with hiding something
exactly,
from you.
Exactly. Right. That's what it was.
Something like that. I don't remember. But
yeah, but it's just like, yeah, I don't have to tell you.
And anything. Like how she walks away. She's still there, but he doesn't see her anymore.
He doesn't see her anymore.
And the reality of this movie, like, man, every building could be a ramshackle piece of shit and it could look amazing to you all the time.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome? Yeah. Amazing how...
Amazingly,
if you go in
scary.
There, amazingly scary, and yeah. I like those ideas. They don't explore that in the movie, but I like how I thought that in the movie. And
yeah.
Such a weird thing. It's a VR insanity. It's Ready Player One.
Agreed.
But like in a very different, more fucked up version, kind of.
Yeah, more fucked up for sure.
Anyway, I like that. There was another point I was going to make. Very strange. So there's some nudity in the scene. And from Amanda Seyfried and a bunch of hookers, more hookers than I thought it would be. And... So I found this really perplexing because she's naked in flashbacks, right? That he sometimes dreams about, I guess, or revisits in his head. And then when they have the sex scene, she has clothes on. Was that something that I missed in there? Was there supposed to be some sort of quirk in there that I missed? Know. Was it like a lie for himself? Was it a different memory? Was that the camera versus what he was? I thought it was on purpose, and I was trying to think of a reason, and I couldn't think of one. I'm like, oh, she's willing to show off the goods in this movie, I guess, which is, I guess, the first time. And then, but why not show it in the actual sex scene when they're together?
I don't know.
It was very strange. I don't know. Did you notice that or didn't pay attention?
No, I didn't pay attention to it.
Okay. It's very strange. It's like, oh, she has a clone on this time. Maybe it meant something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Got too much into it.
Well, I like that the one scene that's when he talks to the guys, like, make sure the edit's really good or else because she's going to catch it. And it was like the most obvious edit ever. Like... Super easy to catch.
Which edit?
The edit to make sure that he actually works where he works the second time around when they actually have sex. And she's like, I guess I should delete this.
Oh.
And she goes back.
Back far enough to the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Where she sees the cop and the cop sees he's a lieutenant, whatever. Yeah, I mean, I always thought that she was going to do that. I'm surprised she didn't catch him the first time, honestly.
Right. Well, I just think the guy left it there on purpose.
Oh, you think so? Oh, okay. Because I didn't think he was able to hide it if it's already in the ether.
Yeah, no, he's able to hide it.
What'd you think of the design of how you see the world, how you access files and shit?
Kind of shitty.
It just blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of shitty. It's just very grid-like.
Like, I mean,
it's the most uncreative person invented this thing.
It's just grids. It's just grids and grids and grids.
Like, at first I thought it was kind of cool, but it got really boring.
Yeah,
imagine growing up with that.
Exactly, dude. Oh, my God. I kill myself, yeah.
I hope you can act. I hope maybe people can customize it and make some crazy thing out of it. I hope so, because otherwise this is really awful. Anything else you want to say on this movie in general?
No, I can't think of it. Like I said, overall, I like the overall world. Like I said, I'm glad I didn't get that much information, but at the same time, I wanted information. It was really weird.
Yeah.
But overall, yeah, like you said, I had fun with it. I had fun with it.
And it's a Netflix original film. You can watch it on there now. I'm going to say it for free, but not really. So yeah, catch it up. We enjoyed it. Unlike my last couple Netflix movies I've seen, I didn't really enjoy. So that we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our third film of the evening, which is a marathon pick, which is what, Roth?
Rear Window.
Sweet. It's a classic. Stay with us, guys.
Miss Lonelyheart, Well, at least that's something you'll never have to worry about.
Oh? You can see my apartment from here all the way up on 63rd Street?
No, not exactly, but we have a little apartment here that's probably about as popular as yours. You remember, of course, Miss Torso, the ballet dancer? She's like a queen bee with her pick of the drones.
I'd say she's doing a woman's hardest job, juggling wolves.
Well, she picked the most prosperous looking one.
She's not in love with him, or any of them.
How can you tell that from here?
You said it resembled my apartment, didn't you?
A wheelchair-bound photographer spies on his neighbors from his apartment's window and becomes convinced one of them has committed murder.
Murder.
The movie we are reviewing today is Alfred Hitchcock's 1954 Rear Window.
Which means just back window, right?
Yeah, the back window.
Like, yeah, because I guess more common back then, courtyards like this existed, right? And like you can see through everyone's rear windows. So like,
well, this is the Chelsea neighborhood in New York, right?
It's like you can see never see anyone's apart like a living room. Mm-hmm. You just see like the back door.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
This is starring James Stewart, Grace Kelly, Wendell Corey, Thelma Ritter, Raymond Burr, Judith Evelyn, and others.
Grace Kelly, though.
Grace Kelly.
She's a knockout. Was a knockout. I don't know if she's alive. I'm sure she's dead. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But Grace Kelly, though, very beautiful.
Passed away in 82.
Nice. I mean, not nice. But
young.
Yeah, she passed away young. Yeah.
52 years old.
Obviously, James Stewart is one of, you know, the Autumn Shank of his year time, you know?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks of his time, I mean. Yeah, so I think you went first on Anon. He went first on the telly.
Didn't I do this on purpose?
You did do it on purpose.
All right. So I'm going to give my first impressions of Rear Window. My first viewing. Okay.
Yeah.
It is my first viewing. I obviously picked this movie for one of those reasons. But on top
I'm
of
surprised.
It, this is direct. There's been a lot of spoofs.
Simpsons
did a great one with mm-hmm. Bart. I've seen it in a couple other things, random stuff. Now that I've seen the whole movie, I've seen some other scenes in the movie that kind of are familiar as well.
Definitely.
You can see this obviously just being portrayed. Just the movie's obviously impacted pop culture very well. So my first impressions of the movie is that it's as much as I hoped, as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I've basically seen the movie without seeing the movie is there already, but the way it still kind of finishes it and still ramps up still works because Alfred Hitchcock still does a great job doing the movie, directing the movie. So it didn't fall apart on me, even though I knew certain things happened and certain things didn't. Mm-hmm. Kind of one of the direct sequels to this is we talked about a Disturbia, right?
Yes.
Remakes. My apologies. There was a TV to made remake called Rear Window also that came out in the 80s, I want to say.
Hmm.
But yeah, overall, it was still enjoyable to watch. There's a lot of stuff going on. I love how it feels human. It doesn't feel just like we're pointing on here, going on here. That doesn't go off. It's just all of this is going at the same time during his time of
convalescing.
Being, yeah, convalescing, exactly. So every time he has a conversation, I love where the camera's focusing on. He never has to pay attention. He's never paying attention to certain things because he's always paying attention to something else. And when he should be paying attention to other things. So he never sees the whole picture, even though he thinks he's seeing the whole picture because he's already got something stuck in his head. And it's great. I love those point of views that we have, those super focused shots. I love them.
Oh, man, they're so good.
I love them. Not only are they crystal clear, at least in the movie I bought, but it's just really good because it completely focuses you on one thing and it distracts you from everything else. And that's such a great thing, especially when you have such a small area to work with. you're literally in a room the whole time, and you only see the backyard of, or this apartment, a bunch of other apartment complexes, and it works really well. So I overall enjoyed the movie. I thought it did. I thought it was great, and I can see why it influenced pop culture a lot. Luke, what did you think?
There's a sinister looking kid looking right at me. That's from The Simpsons.
I don't remember that.
Oh, in The Simpsons episode, it's like Bart actually looks at the telescope of a guy with a camera. It's like, oh, there's a sinister looking kid looking right at me.
All right. So what did you think of the movie? Your first time, by the way?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I don't watch these old movies.
Twofer.
Two, yeah.
Because of the Simpsons episode, I thought it was going to be just all in his head.
Oh, really?
The scenario.
Okay.
So that kind of had, that's what I thought the movie was going to be like. Okay, this, you know, he thinks he's seeing a crime being committed. He's just, you know, his imagination's just running amok.
I mean, it makes sense. He's bored.
Yeah, and also he's no making up something, you know. Yeah. You can only jerk it so much.
Right. So much before it becomes really chafed. Right.
So, you know, I just figured, okay, this, I want to see what really happens at the end.
So it may, so it surprised you more, probably.
Yes, right? Like, I wanted to know what the plot twist was going to be, what actually happens, and
Although we're kind of spoiling the whole thing by saying it really happens.
Or does it?
That's okay, it's okay.
It's a fucking old movie.
It's an old movie. Well, I mean, we're going to have a spoiler session, but still. I mean, it's kind of obvious. It's only obvious because this movie made those other movies obvious, right? Like, that's how it comes from. It starts from somewhere. This is one of those films. And Hitchcock is, when they call him a master of suspense, they're not fucking around. The guy's had a lot of practice making master of suspenseful fucking shots and scenes and whatnot. The one of the, other than Rope, this has some really good use of long takes. There are some in the beginning. There's a crucial one in the middle and then at the end, or towards the end, I should say. Where he employs long shots to go over panning around from window to window of these different people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how the film has its own set of rules about what he's want. Like, with the only things we see is what he can see and only from that angle. And we don't hear anything that he can't hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very simple rule that it's never made explicit. But if you think about it, it's completely true. And the movie never deviates from that.
Yeah. But I mean, it's those simple rules that kind of make the movie.
Yes, definitely.
Once you follow those rules, I mean, I think in any movie, kind of like what you're doing. And I think that's really what I like about the movie a lot, is those shots, is that we're getting it from those point of views. I mean, it works great because it almost also coincides with, it's only what he's seeing. We never get it from anybody else's aspect.
Never.
So it works great, man. Even though you're such a small area, I mean, probably a low-ass budget movie.
I don't know. Yeah, probably really low budget. Yeah, right?
I mean, was it all just sets?
Yeah, that's a Hollywood set.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, back then, it's not that you could fake it. I don't know how much you kept to show how much you're faking it. But yeah, it's definitely a set. And another big power of the film is that the windows, all these people's lives, even the killer, potential killer. Where was it?
Moiter.
They're all like...
wide open?
No, they're... a lot of them are markers for his station in life, or how he sees his station in life, or how he perceives it could be way worse, or better, but mainly worse, if he did something wrong, if he does a certain thing. And because a big element of this film also, that nothing to do with the murder, but it has to do with him being, you know, stationary for a few weeks or months, maybe.
Seven weeks.
Okay, so 2 months, almost. Is that he is socially pressured to marry someone. It's particularly Grace Kelly, which is like, how do you say it? Okay, don't say no to Grace Kelly. Who says no to her? She seems awesome and a socialite. She knows her shit. Obviously back then it's different, and you know, I expect different things from women, but besides that, but the whole point is that he wants something too specific, and he's reaching for this. He wants something that he doesn't want. He's adding a lot of things to the social outcome that's expected of him in order for him not to do it. He's a certain, he's a man certain, you know, of a certain age that if he's not married soon, people are going to start questioning him. You know what I'm saying? Back then, it's more common.
He's got the gay.
Maybe that, or maybe like something's wrong with him. Something's fucked up. Maybe his penis don't work. That kind of thing. People start talking. Even today, there are plenty of places where that happens.
Yeah.
Less likely today, of course, but still. I think a lot of that plays into the movie. What do you guys think about that kind of stuff? The windows being like markers for his life.
Yeah, I could see that. And then like not even like his life, but there's also like that one scene where Grace Kelly kind of like how you have like the cute girl that was like prancing in the underwear at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like that could have been like her thing, you know, like she doesn't really care for the guys that are coming into the apartment. They're just there.
Yeah, definitely. Off anything that stuck with you or in that regard, what I was saying?
The cutie and the pink thing, yeah.
Besides that?
Nope. Pretty risque for the 50s.
I'm asking Ralph.
I do agree with you to a certain extent. But what I also see is that he never realizes it, and he thinks he's above all of it. But I think they all do, right?
If they all look torso. That's right. That's the name. That's what I look for a name in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was Miss Lonely Hearts.
No, Lonely Hearts is the
old lady in the bottom left.
Okay. Miss Lonely Heart portrays his fear if he doesn't get married.
Exactly.
Basically. Yeah. And the newly married couple portrays his fear if he does get married.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, the guy's like, oh, you know, every time he opens the window, he gets called, like, you know, whatever his name is, Billy, come back or whatever. He's always calling. She's always calling him, nagging at him already, and they just got married. Yes. That's what those two are.
Right.
And Miss Torso is clearly
eye
candy. But also, a little more, I think it says more what this guy, Ralph, Luke was saying about connecting Grace Kelly to her. I like that. Yeah, that makes more sense for me. Not to mention, it's the only person other than the killer who she talks about more. You know, there's a scene where they talk about the songwriter, for example, a tender scene that talks about the songwriter. But it's mainly Miss Torso that she decides to always jab at him about, which makes sense. Makes sense.
Maybe she's got the lesbians.
But you notice he never cares about the happily married couple upstairs with the dog.
Nope.
He barely cares about the musician, which is kind of himself also.
Yes.
Who's strives in his work.
Yes.
Who literally does only thing for his stuff. He does have his own parties. He wants to show off his work. Same thing with the pictures and everything like that.
Yeah.
But they only focus on him a lot because it's audible. And we have to go up to him. You're like, oh, wow, that's a really good piece.
Yes.
Or... oh, we can hear the music, or something stops, and you're like, well, what's he doing now? Because you stop hearing music, you know.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Which is not unlike James Stewart in the movie. What was his name? Did I forget his name? I didn't mention it yet, did I? Jeff Jeffries. Oh, my God. Come on.
Hey. No, I think it's J.B. Jeffries, right?
Yeah, I mean, L.B. Jeff L.B. Jeffries. Jeffries. But, like, I know, but it says L.B. Jeff Jeffries.
They don't say that. They just call him Jeffries or L.B.
Sometimes they call the whole thing, but Jeff is, I guess, Mania or L.B. Yeah, Jeffrey's, he is kind of like definitely a spotlight hogger kind of guy. Like, he wants it when he can. And it sucks all the more that he's stuck in there and he can only show like old pictures that are framed in his apartment or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you start off with the shot of the one that got him injured.
The race car thing.
Race car, yeah.
That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was a great shot.
Worth it.
Fucking moron. The fuck is he doing?
I don't know. It looked kind of worth it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, would you take that shot if that was... Yeah, I guess. Would you?
Kind of have to.
Okay. Should we make a spoiler? I mean,
we might as well just get into it.
Yes.
I mean, we're in spoilers, guys.
I want to, yes.
Precinct 6, Sergeant Allgood.
Hello. Hello. A man is assaulting a woman at 125 West 9th Street, second floor, at the rear. Now, make it fast. L.B. Jeffries. Chelsea 25598.
Worst massage ever from that person. worst massage.
It looks pretty bad.
It looked like the worst.
Yeah, well, she's like a physical therapist before that was such a thing.
Yes.
I mean, she didn't act like
a nurse who just came in. Whatever.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm getting. Not like a friend, right? I didn't miss anything, right?
No, it's like a nurse.
What did you think of... So the movie does a lot of things to heighten suspense. Some of it involving him convincing others, like the detective friend. Basically, right. Falls for it immediately, by the way. I like how she like is with him all the time. And we'll talk about her more. Grace Kelly, the girl.
Grace Kelly takes Carol a little... Yeah, not immediately, but yeah, almost.
Within the next scene. Like a scene after, maybe. Because it makes sense to her. And I like how the movie... feeds the paranoia of Jeff into the audience, and when he's telling the detective is telling him, "Hey, you're wrong. It can't be this. We have no evidence, circumstantial."
Well, he's saying, right, exactly.
Those times he's like, "You are on Jeff's side because you're indulging in the paranoia as much as it does look bizarre. It looks weird. He looks like he killed that dog,
right?
And all this shit, you know."
But there's also that one. It's that one big thing where he's like, "Well, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you saw." And then he throws it back at Jeffries, where he's just like, "Well, you could have done it. What have you been up to?" And this isn't that. And you're like, "Well, it's not about me." He's like, whoa, but you're bringing his stuff up. So, like, it's all everybody can bring up anything there. It's like, you get what I'm saying? And he's like, "Yeah, but I have a reputation with you. Like, why would I bring anything up?" And that's where he's like, "Oh, okay, well, now you're using our connection and stuff like that." Again, it's smart the way they get into it, where, like, you think there's a way out of it. But the whole time I'm seeing it objectively, like, well, yeah, look at you. You sound kind of mad right now. Like, you're staring out a window. Like, you've been stuck in this house for, like, 7 weeks. You know, like...
And you want to get back to work in, like, yesterday, you know, all the time.
Yeah, because you're missing out on a great job. Because
you're missing out on some really good money.
Apparently. He's so in season to be this guy right now. I have a strange question for Luke Singh, because you didn't expect that certain things coming, especially basing it off The Simpsons.
So this movie was supposed to be in black and white, right? But we saw it in color.
I don't know. I've only seen it in color.
Technicolor.
I think it was Technicolor, yeah. Anyway, Luke, before the mystery of this man murdering his wife happened, who did you think the story was going to revolve around? Did you have a certain lock, like, oh, maybe it's this couple, maybe it's Miss Torso, maybe it's Miss Lonely Hearts?
Well, no, I figured it was going to be around those, but, like, I figured the whole... murder mystery was all going to be in his head.
No, but did you think of someone, like, who would be the main suspect in the windows? Oh, no. Did you think of that before it happened? I mean, maybe not. But I mean,
no.
I was just curious, because it's rare to be in that position. Like, unless you're in that 1954 in a movie theater, you also have no idea. But every movie since, every person since, like, knows the ending and knows everything. Like The Shining and all that. It's right. Popular.
Kaiser Soze.
Usual suspects. Okay. What was the thing I was going to mention? By the way, that guy, the creepy guy, for a guy who is generally harmless, except for this, you know, murdering his wife. Like, he looks very creepy. Something about the glasses.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just me, right? It's
the horn with glasses?
I don't know. The glasses make him look, like, you look creepier without them, Luke. Put it back on. There you go. Go read a book. So I was gonna talk about some of the suspension things. The suspension for me, obviously, the highest moment for me is when Carol goes over to his apartment, the killer's apartment, and manages to not only get out of it barely, which seems like a barely thing, but also gets out of it without her, like, wasting the evidence, so to speak, getting evidence back. That scene. I've seen this my third time watching it. It still got to me this time because we're feeling... And James Stewart's stuck there. He's stuck in that chair. He can't get out. He can barely crawl. Yeah. Very good. Also, at the end, when the killer realizes it's this guy across the way and he's going to go after him, did that scene remind you of No Country for Old Men? The scene where Llewellyn Moss... I really remember this movie, as in the hotel, and Anton Chigurh, the main bad guy, is around. He killed the guy downstairs. He hears some clutter. He turns off his light, and he's getting ready to shoot him through the door, and the light goes off, and you can see it at the bottom of the doorway. That scene reminded me so much of Rear Window.
Hmm.
They really related. Obviously, one's more violent than the other.
Yeah.
But same thing, the killer comes through the wall and through the door and everything. Any of you guys have a feeling like that? Anyway, I really like that scene. But any of you guys, one thing you want to talk about, the murdering and the reveals and everything like that?
I'm reading a book like you told me to.
Good. Ruff?
I don't know. I like the... I like how they're always on the path of things to find the clues and that you're getting this, that you get subtly throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's there for you. Like when you get that picture where he took of the flowers. I didn't see it the first time. I was like, what are you looking at?
No, he had to do it quite a few times for me to really get it. Like, yeah, oh, they're taller. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
Yeah.
And horrible detectives we are. And
yeah, don't be a detective.
When they go searching for it and nothing's there, mm-hmm. All of those things are like, I don't know, for me, it works out. Like, they're trying so much to find evidence that's not there, but like the guy who's actually just literally happened to move it because he thought... You know, he thought it had been found already.
Well, we talked a lot about convenience, too. I didn't talk exactly about a convenience, but the way these characters are markers. Miss Lonely Hearts. So what do we think of the scene when she brings... She has a day that doesn't go very well, but she has that one particular day with a younger man, and he's rough with her because she tries to close the blinds, but we can still see enough. And then he leaves, storms out. Obviously, she fought back or decided.
Well, it doesn't look like she's. It doesn't look like she's rough with her. It looks like he's just assertive, and she didn't want that.
I mean, if rough hasn't not what she wanted.
I get it.
Yeah.
So the thing about Miss Lonely Heart, the way I saw her story, because it's almost like we're almost as invested in her story as anybody else's.
I know that's fine.
Hers is probably the bigger one. She obviously was with somebody a long time ago because she has this weird dinner drink with nobody else, but she pours for both people,
mm-hmm.
and she has a conversation like she like missed out on this
person. It almost looks like she's practicing for a date, but
it's
not really.
She's practicing for a date, or it's something that she's a date she had before and she's replaying it in her head.
Maybe.
To that extent. And she gets this person who's younger, right, for the same thing to fulfill that need,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't go how it went planned in the... her head, so she didn't like that, so she kicked him out. I think that's how I saw it. It's more like she's trying to replay or relive certain moments in her life that she had before, but to almost a certain degree, and she's coming to realize that it'll never happen, you know?
Or she feels that way.
Or she feels
obviously
that way.
Works out really well for her. I'm glad that she hooked up with a songwriter. The songwriter saved her life, though, right? Obviously, from suicide. She was about to do it, and she hears his song.
Right.
And it's the one song that hit her.
Yeah, I think so.
Hit her, sorry, particularly. And then the next, at the end, she...
Exactly.
You know, rises up to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing about that scene, the scene with the date with the young guy, is that it's, I think, a big highlight scene for Carol, Grace Kelly, because she is the one who is talking more about Miss Lonely Hearts in that scene. And... Or maybe not talking, but a lot of looks are giving to her in the editing back and forth, where it's led to believe, at least to me, that the character is feeling...
Sympathizing,
like almost like pre-sympathizing for something that could happen to her, or worrying that something it could happen to her, and just seeing if that's a future that's going to happen to her if she keeps following this guy around, meaning Jeff, who doesn't want to stay with her.
Right.
But
and it's like they have a falling out, right?
They do have a bit of falling out.
They do have a bit of falling out. And they kind of allude to, like, mm-hmm. they broke up.
Yes.
And she even says, like, I'm going to leave, but she's too stubborn to leave. At the same time, she's like, I'll be here tomorrow. And you're like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. At one point, I kept thinking, even in this time, around the third time, is that maybe she's just doing it to see if she can convince him. Like, does she know herself that she really wants to be with him? But, you know, every time she says, well, I love you, you know, it's like you're the one I picked. She believes it, though. I mean, I believe it when she says it. But then at other times, I don't. Other times, I feel like, oh,
yeah, well,
she's just stubborn.
Yeah, it is. It's a mixed bag. But at the same time, she knows where he lies. And he looks distracted the whole movie, obviously, which he is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's a little mad. Like, he's been there for 7 weeks. Like, he's right now, he's trying to get back on focus on doing his job. And she's trying to get him, like, listen, we were cool before you got injured. Now that you've been here, it feels like you're not cool anymore with it. But just because you've been stuck here, and it feels like your life, you think you're going to get stuck not doing anything.
Right. I mean, she's been extremely open about any position that she's worried about.
Right, exactly. Which is really weird because you're like, yeah, you're still going to live your life. I don't understand what you're having.
She loves you. She doesn't want you to change jobs.
Right, exactly. Right? And but he's got this fear like, well, yeah. I lost it. Like, I'm not in it now. And it's one of those kind of
things. Could be a simple thing as just a fear of commitment. It could be just as simple as that. And I don't know how deep we want to make this movie.
Can you elaborate more on that?
No, I cannot.
Okay. Yeah, I think you can. Try.
Shut the hell up.
No, just give it a shot. Just give it.
God, I hate you.
It's my job to try to ask questions.
Good job. Maybe he's just happy in life, doesn't want to get disturbed.
Likes traveling.
likes to travel, go for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Like comes home to a nice familiar thing and then like goes right off to the next Palm thing.
I like how he gets frustrated. He just tells her to shut up. She's like, what did you say? Shut up. Shut up.
Yeah.
She's like, shut up.
Yeah.
But especially those times. Like, that's a big thing.
Yeah. I would never tell Grace Kelly to shut up.
Neither would I. Yeah. I tell her to be quiet.
I've seen some Marvel movies. And
I just put something in her mouth.
You don't win any favors being on this show. Oh, thank you for that, Luke. Joke of the day. All right.
Although Matt, that he's like the master of like changing those flash light bulbs.
He had to be. Yeah.
Jesus.
When
I look at the three pack, I'm like, it's gonna take you forever.
I mean, I would have died.
Jeez, back in those days, if you wanted to, you know, shoot with flash.
I thought that's commitment. Like, crush the glass and just throw like shards into the glass.
Well, what's funny is that when I thought he said he had a flashlight, I was like, oh, you have a flashlight? And I was like, no, that's just the flash of your camera.
Yes, which they were extremely bright back then. Yeah, that's no joke for sure. Yeah. They were very, very, very bright.
Because it's a one-time thing. Because it's so
bright that it shoots out the filament. Yeah. I've actually seen one of those in action. They're really fucking bright. I saw it from behind. That's what she said. I know. But still.
Oh. What? Filament. Filament.
Oh, my God. How did you make that dirty?
I don't know.
It's a gift. It's a gift and a curse, mainly a curse. Anyway, anything. I mean, it seems like we're joking around. I don't want to miss something about this movie. I mean, I'm not a master of editing or cinematography. Very good stuff. I wish I could.
What I like, okay,
go through the scenes perfectly.
Really
but
big thing, the big thing I like about the movie is that when he's talking to the detective friend, and he's basically telling the detective, "Go do this," right? Like,
yeah,
he's ordering him around, right? And you're like, okay. And this is like the second time he comes back, and they're trying to make the case for it and women intuition. And the guy's like, "Yeah, if I followed every woman's intuition, I'd never solve
my
case."
Oh my god!
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you know all this like these things. And it's funny that the detective's always one step ahead of them. Like, well, you should do this. And he's like, well, that phone call I got from this thing was that person and this and that. Like, he does his homework. The detective obviously does his job right. It's just these guys feel like, and the movie does a good job of, like, making you feel like, it didn't happen, guys. It's probably just in your, like, you're just overthinking and shit like that. And it kind of dissuades you from it, right? And these guys are just, like, so in it that they're, like, they don't want to give up. And this detective, like, that little loop. Because you're like, oh, okay, the movie could be ending soon. You're like, I mean, does it end here? Like, are they just going to let it go? Something else happens instead, and it's a different murder, not even anything related to that, or something dumb, and then the dog dies, and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, that was a turning point for sure. Like, no turning back point was that part. Right after that.
I thought it could have still been an accident.
But I think the movie
puppy slipped.
But I think the movie does a really good job of, like, making you feel like, well, it's over. Like, we've checked everything already.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good job for me.
Yeah. No, I agree. And also, do you feel like the movie had to put Jeff in danger?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I felt more excited when the guy figured out that it was him across the way from his own apartment, and then he turned off the lights like an idiot. Like, that was more exciting to me than him going up, talking to him briefly, and then trying to choke him and throw him out the wall. Like, all that, you know, like him looking across.
Yeah, I just don't know how how you finish that.
Right. Yeah.
Him looking across was great. And that was like, oh shit moment. And the only reason it plays a little bit better is that the fact that Jeff doesn't think about it.
Yeah.
Is that he doesn't think that he's going to come to him until it's too late.
Yeah.
And he can't do anything about it. That's a good moment. But other than that, I do agree that that other moment should have been either maybe a little bit held longer, or maybe like a sign or something. I don't know, but something it would have. It was something
the most cutthroat sign.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on Rear Window? Window of the Rears?
No, but listen, I just have seen so many things coming out from this movie.
Yeah.
Completely remade into other things.
Yeah, I mean, like
the Simpsons episode.
Great study of thrillers and murder mysteries and a lot of that shit.
I thought he just killed a plant and the wife was out of town.
It's a pretty shitty plant. I mean, plant killers, not good. But I'm glad you picked this, Ralph. It's a good movie.
Likewise.
And I really am surprised. I thought you'd seen it before. I thought both of you had seen it. Well, I mean, Luke might believe that more.
The modern version of it, which was Disturbia, right?
Yeah.
That came out.
Wasn't bad either.
It wasn't a bad movie. And I think they did it as much as they could with the job. And, you know,
I liked it.
I liked it, too. And I mean, they go more into that of, like, other random dumb stuff. But,
definitely. And he's also like a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. There's an age difference.
Annoying.
But you know what? They do a good job of like having to, what's it called? Dealing it with modern times.
Definitely. I agree with that. And I believe that's it. And that is our review of Rear Window, which you can find.
Oh, yeah. I had the other one. What's up? Fright Night, another movie, that feel like the same way as Rear Window.
Oh, yeah, it does. With the whole next-door neighbor being a vampire, he just moved in and shit. And he's looking out Yeah. I get that. There's a lot of those. Girl next door kind of thing, serial killer next door movies.
What's that whole just in general, seeing them from the back window, doing something amiss that no one thinks they're watching you?
Right.
Kind of
thing. In one way, I wish we'd done Touch of Evil, which has a lot of different things entirely, but a lot of things that came from other movies, from that movie in a similar way. Anyway. That's a different thing for another different day. But now that is it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. Don't forget to tell us what you think of these films and our reviews of those films over at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Podmoviecast is also the name of our Twitter account that we never use. Not to mention, otherpodcast.com is our website. We can find everything we have done and everything we'll ever do. Luke, where can people find you on the internet?
At Slotmaster Luke on the Twitters.
Right on, Ralph.
At Gamer Ralph with two R's and an F.
You want to give me a letterbox too or no?
No, fuck them.
All right, then. My letterbox and Twitter account is on Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Don't forget to give us an iTunes ratings or something. Ratings? Yeah. Stars. We like stars. All the stars.
Unsubscribe. Resubscribe. Grab your friend's phone, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe.
That is homework for next time. That is the homework for next time. And remember, guys, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other weekend. Luke, you're picking the next films. Do you remember what they were?
Let's hope so.
Deadpool 2.
That's good. It's one.
Ding, 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 ding.
We, for the marathon pick, we're going to do Ben-Hur.
Who are you going to bend?
Her.
Okay.
Yeah. Ben-Hur. There's going to be a lot of those. Version? The 1951. It's in color.
Not the 1912 one?
No.
Okay.
The one that won all the nominations.
Yes.
Okay. And then for the third movie, we're going to do the HBO original Paterno.
Good job.
Al Pacino.
Man, you really held out for that one.
I think it's Al Pacino.
Pacino?
Hoo-ah.
Okay. Hoo-ah.
Dude, that's going to be his legacy, guys. His fucking...
Yeah, I know.
Obviously, his godfather. But anyway... stay with us for that. Until then, I am Oscar.
And Luke.
And Ralph.
See you later.
Arrivederci! We'll meet again!
Five. Four. Obviously, you have the... Tully thing up. I'm sure you do.
Are we going to do what we've been watching?
Yeah, we're going to do the intro. Five, four, three, two... Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, a show that had blah, 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 blah.
Words are hard. There you go.
Whatever.
No, it's...
Whatever.
No, it's not whatever. It's two different movies.
Whatever the fuck.
Fuck you.
Keep talking.
I'm done talking.
No, keep talking.
Blow me.
You know, if you don't use it after a while, it becomes vestigial.
I use mine daily.
With your right hand. Left, go.
Si. See.
No, don't do it.
See.
Do you see my face drop?
See. 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 See.
All right.
See.
You're fine.
Jesus. Blow me.
No, just look like a bum. You should shave.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm off of work. I'm not doing shit.
What, 10 o'clock shadow there? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Or his head?
It's like both.
It does look a little less Aryan-y to me.
A little less Aryan? Can he ever look a little less Aryan?
I mean, by now.
No, God.
All I have is Deadpool 2. At least pick your marathon movie.
Let's do Ben-Hur.
You want to bend
you
her?
You can't bend her. Shh, fuck you. Get out of my head.
Get out of my head.
Do you own that movie already?
You're supposed to. Select theaters.
It's not the 2012 one, right? By the way, there's a remake.
No, yeah, I'm doing the first remake of it. Not the original from like the bad 20s. This is like the 50s one. I think I put the year on there too.
Yeah, the one that won all the awards.
Yes, starring
Ryan Reynolds.
Audrey, what's his face?
Maybe his
name? Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer. What was that? You with the face?
Georgia O'Keeffe. Timothy O'Toole. I'm just saying old people now.
Yeah.
I think Timothy O'Toole was in the movie.
I think you're thinking of Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking of You Were Never Really Here, but there's no showings near us unless I think the closest one is Glenn Ellen.
That sounds really familiar.
It's the Amazon Studios with the...
Is it on Amazon?
Phoenix.
I did hear good things about that movie, though.
Yeah, but it's only in Glen Ellen. It's like the only place to see it right now.
Okay. And it will be only till next year's release? It won't be wide release by then?
I'm on their website.
Is it available in Glen today? Is that what you mean?
Like right now.
So what are the chances of it coming out more wide release by then?
Like I'm looking next Tuesday. There's like a 3:15 p.m. showing.
But and Netflix has no new movies coming out
that you want. Glen Ellen.
And Netflix has no new movies you want to see. They're coming out.
I don't know. What does Netflix have that shit?
They don't. You have to like Google it. I googled. Netflix movies may release in 2018.
Yeah, that's how Rafi's found Anon.
Halal.
I liked it.
Why don't you guys start talking about Anon and I'll start looking for the movie?
Why are we going to start talking about a movie now?
I mean, we could do Anon while he looks for shit.
Oh, like just do the middle review now?
Might as well.
Okay, we'll pull up the thing then.
I have it already, let's go.
Oh, okay, fuck.
You the one.
What? What about it? No, I have this thing connected on the thing. No, I don't. I do, but it doesn't work. This thing is older than you. All right. I'm going to do a countdown. Everyone shut up. I need space here so I can edit it right. Five, four, three. I'm going to stab you, Luke. Two.